Your work life, all of our work lives. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
And an annual tradition here at the beginning of the year is for me to pull out my crystal ball and offer some work and career-related predictions, this time obviously for 2018 and beyond. Being smart about some of these predictions, if I am, should help you not just considering what to do in your current job, but making long-term plans for yourself or someone you care about. And hopefully, at minimum, it's kind of entertaining. It's fun to kind of forecast. Hope you you think so. I will go to the phones after I trot out my views and invite you to comment on them or make your own predictions about the workplace. First thing, of course, is, you know, how much will automation really impact jobs? Sure, more jobs are getting automated. But I think that at least for the next decade, the worry may be overblown. A lot of repetitious work is going to be automated, is getting automated, but most jobs that require at least a moderate amount of judgment are going to be augmented but not replaced by technology. Like, for example, the Social Security Administration is going to make more initial decisions by computer, but when there is an outlier or a complaint, there will always be a human to make the final decision. And what's the implication of that for you is there will always be a need for managers, people who will, and critical thinking. While it's really a question of how teachable critical thinking is, but it's certainly worth a shot. So studying things like critical thinking, ethics, management, public speaking, those are the kind of things that will likely prepare you for not being rendered obsolete by a robot or software. The challenge, parenthetically, I might say, is going to be how are we going to address the many millions of people who formerly did those routine jobs? I mean, a guaranteed basic income is what's often proposed, but that will require significant tax increases to companies and to the middle class. Is the tax increase that's going to be needed to cover all of those millions of people, to give them a guaranteed basic income, will it be so large as to kill incentive to work? Will it kill more jobs as more the middle class who are not going to have as much money to spend on products, companies not have the money to hire more? Will it encourage the so-called welfare mentality? You know, not everybody is intrinsically motivated. And if you know you're going to get this guaranteed basic income whether you work or not, not everybody is going to say, well, I want to contribute to society, as we've seen in previous incarnations of attempts to provide social welfare programs or safety net, choose what you want. Another proposal, by the way, before I go on beyond this automation thing, that is being proposed to deal with the problem is job rationing, kind of like France's 35-hour work week. But the downside, everything has a downside. If there was an easy answer, they'd have it. So I like to present both sides. It's seen as a nice way to distribute work across more people, and that's seen as a plus. But that lowers the quality of our goods and services. Like, take an example. Right now, the best cardiologists are so in demand, they may see patients on evenings and weekends because people are desperate. The worst ones may have trouble filling 20 hours a week. And under job rationing, that great cardiologist would be limited to 35 hours a week. Unless, you know, of course, there's going to be exceptions in the law. So let's even take something low level. Imagine that you owned a cafe, a simple little cafe. And, of course, cafes need workers. And not every entry-level worker is going to be reliable, kind to people, honest, not steal from the till. And imagine that you were forced to have this person who was your trusted, wonderful worker in your cafe, who's been working 40, 45 hours a week. And now you say, sorry, the law says 35 hours a week. Is that not going to force you to replace him or her with somebody less good? And how do you think that meritorious worker is going to feel in having her income or his income dramatically cut? So we don't have an answer to this one, but it's certainly the issue of automation's impact on routine work is profound, because not everybody is going to be an artificial intelligence programmer. next prediction is we're going to start hiring in a more valid way. Employers are ever more aware that resumes and interviews and references are notoriously invalid predictors of job performance. And there has been accusations of racial bias in those. So we are going to see more what I call simulation-centric asynchronous interviewing. That means not at all. You don't have to be the interviewer and the interviewee. You don't have to be in the room at the same time. And simulation meaning simulations of the job test. So in other words, you could be, if you're a job applicant, you could be at home in front of your webcam, and you will see the interviewer's questions, mainly simulations of the job's common difficult tasks, because that is an unquestionably valid way of assessing people's preparedness for that job. And then the answers will be recorded on, you know, Google Hangout or Skype or whatever for the employer to review later, and perhaps even review, you know, applicant ones followed immediately by applicant two, or maybe all five applicants' answers to the first question and compare them. So that should lead to more valid hiring. And I really do think we desperately need that, because we all know, whether we're an employee, we feel we're a great employee and we don't get the job and somebody less good gets it. That's inordinately frustrating. And if you're the person who's doing the hiring, you know, obviously there's been a lot of good hires and a lot of bad hires. We certainly need a replacement for the hidebound old resume, interview, and references. Next prediction is what I call the gigification of America. The growing cost of mandated benefits when hiring an American full-time is fueling the increased conversion of full-time benefited jobs to temp gigs. You know, a temp gig, they don't have to pay Social Security and workers' comp and Obamacare or its replacement or Medi-Cal. And so they hire people, and I've made this point too many times, but, you know, universities are the worst. They, you know, they preach treating labor well, but they are hire a majority of faculty as gig on gig, paying them, you know, little money and no benefits. Outrageous. But I think inexorably that's going to continue. And I lament it from a human perspective. Next prediction is Medicare for all. Notwithstanding the current retracement under the Trump administration, I do believe, I've said this before and I could be wrong, but I do think that the Democrats will win both houses in 2018 and then they're going to impeach him. And even under Mike Pence, and certainly after 2020, I really believe the nation is moving inexorably to single-payer health care. Now, that is going to create challenges in cost and access, because many of the newly covered are going to have high health care needs, but limited ability to pay for them. One way this is going to be addressed, and this is where the career implication is for you, my dear listeners, is it's going to be an accelerated replacement of those high-priced MDs with physician assistants, anesthesiology assistants, physical therapy assistants, and so on. That's really the I've been advising my clients actually for about 5 years to do this, and it's really worked. The training is so much shorter, for example, to be a physician assistant than to be a MD. Unfortunately, now the word has gotten out, and it's very hard to get into physician assistant school. But it's a great six-figure paying career to getting to do most of what an MD gets to do. And usually some of the less intractable work, the really difficult problems get sent to MDs. Anyway, so that's a prediction. I call this homework, this next prediction, because we are obviously seeing lots of restrictions on driving, more reducing the number of parking spaces, increasing tolls, now pay roads, more carpool lanes are not only being expanded, but the hours in which you have they're in use are expanded. Traffic tickets have become very expensive. So because of those restrictions on driving, a lot of the residential building is going to be in infill, that is near mass transit stations, BART stations, Caltrans, bus stations, AC transit. And the trend to telecommuting for at least part of the week is going to continue. So what are some of the implications of that for you? It may be you may be able to save that horrible commute increasingly your employer may be willing to let you telecommute for at least part of the week. And if you are at all in the world of real estate, whether you're an architect or you're a developer or you're a property manager or you're an investor looking to buy a, you know, a little duplex or whatever, you know, I really believe that that because more people will be working at home and won't be able to rely on the workplace as the basis for a social life, I think that there will be social programming in these apartment developments to build community. So I think jobs as housing community managers and architectural jobs that are architects or architect assistants and draftspeople who focus on homes that are where people are going to work, I think will do well. I also think that the driving restrictions are going to make more people's social life more virtual and with neighbors. They will also contain immersion rooms, in my judgment, in which all four walls, ceilings, and floors are going to be LCD screens. Already, you know, you can get, like, they have already screened up to 90 inches for not an outrageous amount of money. Certainly, I've seen, I was shocked. I was in Walmart recently, and like a 65-inch TV, which used to cost $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, you can get a 65-inch TV for $700. So it can't be long until entire walls are going to be LCD screens. And that combined with all VR headsets and 3D holography is going to allow for remarkably immersive entertainment and education and training, even matchmaking. So I think that being involved in that industry, creating homes that are places where you, where people, more people will be working, and their recreation, because we are going to have a harder time getting around. I've said this before. I have a dear friend who's dying. He lives in Marin. I live in Oakland. I can't get to him. It's a two-hour trip. In almost, even on the weekends sometimes, the traffic is impossible. And, I, you know, mass transit would be a whole day each way or half a day each way. So I think we're going to be interacting with each other much more virtually. And also as our phones, our iPhones get more sophisticated. So thinking about a career in which you are facilitating making that happen is, I think, going to be riding with the wave instead of riding against it. I'm going to have some more, certainly, of these predictions, but I'd like to invite you to call. So, you're listening to Work with Marty Nemko here at KELW, and I am giving my work and career-related predictions for 2018 and beyond. And if you would like to either add your own or augment what I'm saying or disagree, a polite disagreement is always welcome here, the phone number. Or if you'd like a workover, that's the foundational a foundational purpose of the show. If you or someone you love is struggling with your work life, even if you're successful and still unhappy, or you're unemployed and desperate, any kind of work-related problem is fair game, and I usually can be of some help. I invite you to call. The phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, for all those reasons, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Another prediction that will affect our work life is I believe we're going to print our clothes. We are going to see, we're already starting to see, but we're going to see more mass customized 3D printed clothing at websites from, unfortunately, the big are getting bigger and the little mom and pops are going out of business. But at websites from Walmart.com to Nordstrom.com to Amazon.com, a laser that's built into your phone, your smartphone, will enter your measurements precisely, far more than you could measure it yourself. You'll then pick a style and a fabric, and the website will send printing instructions to your 3D printer. This is not necessarily going to happen in 2018, but it's inexorable. It's inexorable. We're already seeing houses. MIT proved last year that it could build a house using a 3D printer. So clearly, it's going to be able to do fabric. And no one likes to pay for shipping. No one likes to again, brave the traffic or sit in mass transit to get to the mall, to find a parking spot there, and then hope they have what you love in your size in a reasonable amount of time. More people are going to let their, as the old saying used to be, let their fingers do the walking, but they're going to be doing that walking on the websites, and you're going to have them customized exactly the style fabric you want, and thanks to laser, which are super precise measuring devices, We'll get your exact measurements, and and then you will pay your money, and that will, just like when I go on my Kindle, as soon as I pay my money, as soon as I click yes, I want to buy it, Amazon sends the instructions for, sends the book to me on my Kindle. They're going to do exactly the same thing with clothes. It's, after all, it's just ones and zeros, bits and bytes. They will send the code, instead of to a Kindle, will send it to a 3D printer. And that will also, by the way, create jobs, because those things are going to be buggy. We're talking about liquids of various viscosities going to be printing out. That's going to lead to a lot of clogging and messing and whatever. So being a technician who specializes in this next generation of products, and that 3D printer is merely one example, but it's going to be, we are going to have autonomous vehicles. The auto mechanic type who specializes in repairing the LIDAR. LIDAR is the laser system that is going to be used, laser radar, that's going to be used to drive autonomous vehicles. We're clearly 3, 5, 10 years away from autonomous vehicles being at all pervasive, although GM is going to be rolling out this year in New York City, in downtown Manhattan, of all things, a fleet of autonomous vehicles. So, again, my job here is to try to help you be ahead of the curve. So you know, hands-on mechanic types might want to start at least take a course on as a sideline, do some learning about this, about what will it take to install, maintain, service, repair autonomous vehicles, especially the features that are different from the standard vehicles. Other predictions. Asian countries, as everyone knows, are becoming ever more formidable. They used to be, you know, we used to be complacent here in the United States. Oh, they just want to copy us and they duplicate our products. No more. Asian universities, I happen to know specifically in China, are now focusing on creating innovators who are not just copying what American designers or Western designers create, but making their own innovations. So with the enormous size of the population in Asia, China and India specifically, particularly, and their long tradition of interest in science, technology, engineering, and math, I predict that many more American companies are going to enter into joint ventures of various sorts, partnerships, licensing agreements, temporary branded co-branding with Asian countries. And so I really think it's going to be ever more important than ever for us to become culturally competent in America with at least one Asian country. And that will render you far more job secure than simply being a tech person, because too many tech jobs like coders that are still extremely in demand now are likely to be offshored, because any work product that can be shipped over the internet could much more inexpensively be done in a low-cost country. I'll give out the phone number again. I have been ticking off my work and career-related predictions for 2018 and beyond. If you want to agree, disagree, or amplify, or if you've got a work-related problem you'd like me to try to help you solve it, maybe you don't know what you want to be when you grow up, even though you're already grown up, or you're ensconced in a career but feel like you desperately want to change, or you are even in pre-retirement or retirement and are wondering how to do some work that's useful. It may be remunerative, maybe not, and are not quite sure what to do, I can usually help. I call them workovers, usually no pummeling involved, and the price is certainly right, zero, zippo, nada. The phone number for any of those reasons here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I really have probably given a little short shrift to computers in my discussing of prediction trends. Certainly, we've been hearing endlessly about self-teaching computers. And the terms could vary: machine learning, artificial intelligence, active artificial intelligence, deep learning, but the concepts are basically the same. The next generation of software and robots are going to learn from their mistakes. They're going to get ever smarter, like Alexa. We have an Alexa at home at the, you know, Echo Alexa, you can call it. Alexa is the brains behind it, but it's like Amazon calls it Echo. And it can answer any questions like, oh, you know, what was Al Pacino's best movie? And then I get it. It gives me an instant answer. IMDb rates his best movie as Godfather 2 or whatever. And they're self-teaching. They get ever smarter the more questions and the more input they get. So I really think that the world of self-teaching computers, certainly if you are a coding-oriented person, if you don't already know it, you probably should, because it's so hot. But really being an expert at some aspect, there are many aspects of artificial intelligence, but being an expert at not only coding, but again, I want to stress that in order to keep a job here in America and not simply have it offshored, you really do need those management skills. Budget management, people management, public speaking, motivation of people, project management skills. That combination of what I call tech plus, having coding skills, but also some of those management skills, is one of your strongest protectors against your job being offshored. So I'll give out the phone one more time. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem or want to comment on my predictions for 2018 and beyond, the phone number, 415-841-4134. Now let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello. Hi, can you hear me?
I hear you beautifully.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
This is my question. I am 63 years old.
Okay.
And I'm thinking of getting into the paralegal program, and not so much to make a lot of money. My interest was never really making tons of money, but thinking of working for an organization called the Animal Legal Defense Fund.
Okay.
It's a nonprofit that helps animals, and something along that line where I can help the animals or the environment, but mostly animals.
Okay.
And a man my age is 63. I mean, I don't mind sitting during the interview and saying, hey, listen, you know, I don't mind working free for, you know, a couple hours, 4 hours a day until I get the hang of it. You don't have to pay me anything. And if you like me, fine. If I like you, that's fine, too. What do you think about the paralegal program and what I want to do after getting something like that?
Depends what your role is. For me, you know, what is the kind of work that you really like to do? Let's forget about job titles. Let's say I'm the head of the Animal Legal Defense Fund. And I say to you, Joe, whatever your name is, I say, you know, I like you. I really like your devotion to the cause. You're willing to even work for nothing. But I really what I want to do is put you to work at that which you're really good at or could quickly become good at and that you would enjoy. What would you say to me?
Well, I enjoy writing, and I'm good with details. And I guess strategizing, so maybe strategizing like activist type of scenarios and activities and that kind of thing. So probably on one hand, good with details, good with writing, and on the other hand, strategizing and bringing into fruition a good activist type of encounter or activity.
Okay. What strikes me is this. The paralegal prepares you to be an underling, whereas I think you might be able to get to do all of those things you just described by being a writer in their fundraising department, writing thank you letters to donors, writing exciting annual reports to donors, going out in the community and giving talks at Rotary clubs and at churches and whatever in order to encourage people to donate. And you essentially would be able to propose your strategy, because you like to strategize the thing, to the bosses. And as long as they're seeing it as a reasonable way of bringing in the dollars, I mean, the Animal Legal Defense Fund suffers from not being a brand name. We have a lot of animal rights organizations, from the Wildlife Federation to the Sierra Club, etc. And you're fighting for the mind share and the dollars of people who, you know, are inclined to give to these brand name organizations. So I would imagine that they are really hungry for dollars. That, you know, in the end, that becomes a key part of activism. The more money you have, the more, I mean, that's why all these political campaigns from Donald Trump to Hillary Clinton spend so much time trying to raise money. It's why every responsible person is crying for campaign finance reform, because unfortunately money is the lifeblood of the, whether it be a company or a nonprofit. So if you come to them and say, hey, I can write for you, I can, I'm detail oriented, so I'm going to be writing carefully, there won't be errors, and I can develop a smart strategy for communicating with the community, you might get to do all of what you want. What do you think?
Well, that sounds very interesting. Of course, I would have to beef up my my speaking skills, because I'm kind of shy, and sometimes it takes me, even now as I'm speaking with you, for words to enter my mind and be able to speak those words properly and in the right place, that kind of thing. So. Yeah, so I'd have to beef up my speaking skills.
Maybe. I have two thoughts. I'm going to argue why you can and should, and I'm going to argue why you may not need to.
Okay.
You know, slick people are generally disliked.
Yes,
I am pretty verbal, but you know, it makes people feel defensive. It puts them on their guard.
Uh-huh.
A person who is less glib is often very... is more credible, and is somebody will trust them more. It leaves more space, more room for that person to build, to insert their energy into the conversation, and therefore to feel more ownership and investment in donating. So I'm not sure that if you're a little hesitant or whatever, it's going to hurt you. You know what's going to help you more than anything? Your age. Because donors... are generally have money. You have to be a little older normally to have enough money to have discretionary income to donate a lot. So your age in this field will be an actual plus. Now, that's one side of it. Now, you could say, Marty, you know, I just know that when I'm going to be with a donor or talking to a group, my heart's going to be pounding. I'm going to have a terrible time of it. I'd rather just write. Well, that's fine. You could say, you know, what I'm proposing to you, Mr. or Ms. Head of Animal Legal Defense Fund, is I'd like to do some writing for you. Thank you notes to donors, solicitation letters, the brochures, the website copy, and that way you don't have to improve the public speaking. What do you think?
Well, that sounds interesting. That sounds, I can swing either way until I get secure enough to present myself in front of people. But, sometimes talking and sounding and having the disposition of a monk, which is kind of fits my aura, I guess, would come in handy versus being a slick talker. Because you're right, it's, when I hear someone being a slick talker and they use big words and stuff and they seem overly intelligent, and there's a little defensiveness on I guess on my part and probably others, as you stated.
Right.
I agree with you on that, Marty.
It can be intimidating. I want to come full circle about the paralegal thing. You know, normally it's at least a 1-year program, and when you're 63 and it's going to cost you money and it's the deferred time that you could be working. Before I went and made that investment, when in fact, even after paralegal school, then you're going to be rendered, as I said, third fiddle to lawyers and be just kind of filling out forms and running to the court to file a document. You know, given that you're a writing person and a strategizing person and an activist person, I don't think you want to train to be someone's assistant to the assistant. I think you'd be wiser to try to contact that organization, the Animal Legal Rights Organization, as well as other organizations, especially under the radar ones, not the ones that get so many applications like the Sierra Club or the Wildlife Federation or whatever, but organizations that are small and where you might have a better chance of getting hired and where your offer to work for nothing for a while may be welcome, although I would hold that in reserve. Because too often when somebody works for nothing, they perceive that person as having limited value, and then there's no incentive to make them a paid employee. So I would hold that in reserve. If I could find nothing that was paying, then I would offer to volunteer. And especially if you're just volunteering, they're loath to give you the responsibility of making any strategic decisions. Whereas if you're on the payroll, they've got a financial investment in you, and you're more likely to have some influence.
Got it. That makes a lot of sense. Marty, thank you. I appreciate that.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for calling Work with Marty Nemco.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay. So I was pleased to perhaps help him. If you'd like me to help you, whatever your work-related problem, the phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KLW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I have been offering my work and career-related predictions for 2018 and beyond. I've got a few more. One is the continued decline, the acceleration, accelerating decline of campus-based higher education. A degree used to be a virtual guarantor of improved employment. Now it's just a job hunting license. Half of college graduates under 25 are unemployed or doing jobs they could have done with just a high school diploma. And the comprehensive study, Academically Adrift, found remarkably little freshman to senior growth in those core areas that college is supposed to improve: critical thinking, analytic reasoning, and writing. And that's for the graduates. Only 59% do, even 6 years. I got a letter recently from one of the listeners. His name is Mark Mayfield. And he said, Matt Tiabi had a piece in Rolling Stone concerning student debt and how the situation had become dire and not likely to improve. He claimed that universities are sitting on large cash reserves and yet raising tuition. People paying loans were not lowering their principal, but continually extending interest through government sleight of hand. And then I read an internet story that said that 69% of millennials want their Christmas present. He sent it to me right before Christmas. 69% of millennials want their Christmas present to be help with their student loans, and that 44 million Americans have student loan debt, and 11% are way behind. Average monthly payments are $350 to $400 a month, which is especially bitter if you can't find work. That from Mark Mayfield. So I think that indeed, this message that has been heard loud and clear in all sorts of publications, talking about the problem of the unemployed college graduate, from a cover story in Consumer Reports to a major cover story in The Atlantic. As a result, we're now seeing an increase in people doing much of their learning on a just-in-time basis. And employers are more willing than they used to be to accept applicants who do at least some of their learning outside of the campus. So we're seeing people taking courses on Coursera.org, on Lynda, LYNDA.com. That is the arm of LinkedIn that provides online courses. Udemy.com, UDEMY, very practical courses. And there is a really great upstart that started last year called Masterclass, in which, for example, Jane Goodall teaches conservation, Martin Scorsese teaches filmmaking, and Diane von Furstenberg teaches fashion. And each course costs only $90. So I think the trend toward learning outside of the ivory tower is likely to increase. I got a note here from somebody who wants to who wrote with a career question. She wants to start a second career doing voiceover work. She doesn't have any previous experience, but she's had some past acting experience in college. She's interested in recording audiobooks. How would she get started? Would I recommend that she take a class in voice training? I think some training would be useful, but the world has changed. This is a perfect segue to what I just talked about. There have been commercial programs that cost $10,000 a piece for these voice trainings, and they give you you end up with an MP3 demo reel or whatever. But I really believe that now there are free and low-cost courses that teach you the essence of what you want to know for free. Then the best thing you can do is start to make your demo reel. Try out different kind of personas. There are many voiceover people, and there are websites now where people are matched, who are voiceover artists, are matched with employers who want voiceovers. But usually you need to define a niche. So I would encourage you, is your tone of voice one of an activist? Is it more of a laid-back southerner? Is it, finding your voice and branding yourself as that would enable you to build a brand that would enable you to stand out from the many other voiceover people. And the reason you need it's so critical to stand out is that the barriers to entry are low. You know, so many people say, well, I got a nice voice. I can do voiceover work. But it really is. I was glad to hear that that person has some acting experience because you really are an actor. I am now listening to an audiobook, the definitive biography of H.L. Mencken. And the person who is reading it is a guy named Patrick Cullen. He's got a stage name. He's John, I can't remember his name. But he's a well-known actor, and he gets to read audiobooks. The two major companies that do voiceovers for books, she wants to do audiobooks, are Brilliance Audio and Blackstone Audio. And she might go to their websites and see if they're soliciting. But there's another way to build your portfolio. And that is people who self-publish on Amazon have an option to have an audiobook recorded. And I think the website for that is audible.com, where there's a whole menu of people or a collection of people who are available to do voiceover work. And so this woman should probably visit some of those that website and look at the profiles of other voiceover people. And see how they present themselves, how they niche themselves, etc. So those are my thoughts on how this person might want to enter voiceover. But again, it is one of those fields, because of the low barriers to the entry and it seems fun and easy, there's a lot more applicants. Somebody who works at KELW, who is one of my very favorite people here, and a really smart guy, great guy, he does voiceover work, and he struggles. He, every morning at 6 in the morning, he goes onto this website and he looks for voiceover things, and he's got to send demos for free in hopes that somebody's going to hire him, and then he may get 100 or 200 or 300 bucks. It's usually, at best, unless you're already a well-known actor, it's usually a sideline. Those are my thoughts about voiceover. Let's go. I'll give out the phone number again. Got a work-related problem? The phone number here at Work with Marty Nemco and KELW, 415-841-4134. That's the number for what I call a workover, 415-841-4134. It's your turn on the air. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind? Hello?
This is Scott.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Hi, Scott. I hear you well.
Don't you agree that in the future, more people will be self-employed?
No.
Partly because the structure of our society is headed that way.
Nope.
With how work is being aggregated and created. That the current changes in tax code are going to persuade more people to become LLCs and become self-employed.
Disagree. I think more people are going to try to be self-employed because it's ever harder to get a good job. But it's become, 10 years ago, I was very bullish on self-employment because the internet was just starting and there were a ton of opportunities. I remember doing shows 10 years ago on affiliate marketing, on website development. I believe that is now a mature market, and so the low-hanging fruit for the self-employed, storefronts are dead. There's too few people. Even I was just reading how many malls are closing. Macy's is closing 100 stores. This year, 100, just Macy's alone, and many others have. So I think retail is dead. I think the internet for the self-employed person is dead because now the big players have got such amazingly useful websites, whether it's jewelry at BlueNile.com or it's, you know, anything you want in the world at Amazon.com, and then the competitors like Walmart.com, and there's rumor, by the way, that Amazon is going to buy Target. I think that the e-commerce space, and that's going to be pretty dead. Tax code is much less favorable to self-employed people than you think because you have to pay self-employment tax, which is 7.5% of gross income, up to a huge amount, up to $130,000 or whatever. And so I am not convinced that self-employment, more people will feel they want to try it, but I don't think there'll be an increased success rate. And remember, in reality, if you're don't just watch the media and see somebody on Oprah. I was an unemployed, homemaker, and now I'm making millions of dollars. Or you watched Shark Tank. To be successfully self-employed today requires an amazing skill set. You can't afford to hire out accountants, IT people, salespeople, marketing people, programmers, research and development people. It's mainly on you. And so I do not believe that self-employment is – I've changed, you know, my tune over the last decade because I don't think it's as viable as it used to be. Anyway, that's my best thought.
I appreciate your insights.
For what it's worth. Anyway, I'd be happy to offer you my insights about your career opinion or your career dilemma. Phone number here, Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I think now it would be kind of fun to, instead of talking about these fields, there are a few careers that I think are likely to burgeon, specific, very specific careers that are likely to burgeon in the future. But again, the phone number for work over 415-841-4134. If you are kind of an investigative type, I really think that, you know, we always react to the disaster du jour. We hear about terrorism, so we're going to beef up our terrorism. But I really think that biological weapons, and we hear about cyber, you know, all these cyber attacks, everything from the IRS to Equifax, you know, these invasions, these cyber attacks. But I really do believe that bioterrorism may be our greatest threat. Because it has greater potential for killing lots of people. Every second after a bio attack can cost lives. For example, once that highly communicative smallpox bacillus is in the air, they're as hard to control as feathers from a pillow dumped from on top of a skyscraper. So there should be ample jobs in the bioterrorism space for scientists, yes, who are developing prevention techniques, you know, sensors that will be posted on, you know, on the sides of buildings or whatever. Companies that are manufacturing these devices, and salespeople who are selling bioweapon detector sensors. So I think that's an area, specific area that will likely grow. I mentioned earlier that ever more initial decisions are going to be made by computer, whether it's, you know, a housing appraisal or the value of an insurance claim or whether somebody should be eligible for Social Security or even a recommended medication. Those initial decisions will be made by computers. Maybe even in the future, because there is so much, such invalidity in our current system of how we choose who's going to get hired and who's going to get into our colleges and universities. We may even have computer-based initial decisions on who gets hired or admitted to college. But there will always be a need for what you call an umpire, somebody who is going to, when a decision is appealed or when a decision seems anomalous to what the norms would be, people to review that. I think a computer decision umpire will be a solid career. And again, what will be required there is really good reasoning skills, critical thinking skills, communication skills to convey good news or especially bad news. I think there is a future career. I also think there's going to be a new career. Well, it may not be called this, but I'm calling it a psycho designer. Technology is, as I pointed out with mass customized clothes, is going to be able to create highly customized items at low cost. And there'll be a temptation to manufacture lots of lookalikes. Technology makes it easy to stamp out millions of identical items. And the third factor contributing to the psycho designer, I'm going to tell you what it is in a minute, our stresses in our society are getting ever ratcheted up. Life is Darwinian. And technology's advances are decreasing the amount of low-stress routine work. That means that most people will ever more often have to be on their A-game. That's a formula of high stress. Well, for time immemorial, we have found peace in the aesthetic, in individual beauty, the individualistic, not stamped-out stuff, whether it's an ancient temple, a public garden, an inspiring skyline, a home that's not a tract home but your individual one. Those are the factors that should facilitate the development of a new career that I'm calling psycho designer. Such people would work with architects, product manufacturers, city planners to create environments that are enlivening or peaceful, nostalgic or forward-inspiring, but not sterile. So, just a thought. But what about careers that are for the future that are for social types? As I was pointing out earlier, ever more of our work is going to be done at home, and our personal needs are going to be met by next generations of smartphones, and so people are thinking they're going to be lonelier. There'll be some people who are perfectly happy to live virtually, You know, there's a new robot, a thinking, talking robot that cracks jokes. It was on Britain, Good Morning Britain, called Sophia, and had a fully engaging conversation with Piers, whatever his name is, who used to be on CNN. Remarkable. And then there's Gatebox. It doesn't look as realistic, but is a virtual live-in friend. It's like an Alexa with personality. That it's like a 3D holographic anime character. It's marketed in Japan to hardworking men who don't choose to or can't find or sustain a workable romantic relationship. It's still crude, but in the coming decades, it's easy to imagine quite appealing cyber spouses. So, you know, just like in the old days, we would hire somebody to customize a home theater. I could see a point where people are hiring cyber spouse customizers. You know, based like on a detailed questionnaire, the owner of the cyber spouse would complete this thing, and then the customizer would program the cyber spouse to become the perfect virtual partner. Especially, you know, the gender wars are really expanding. You know, the Me Too movement is certainly making men very defensive. There is more polarization by sex and gender than I've ever seen in my lifetime, and it may be that men and or women will say, you know, it's too stressful. After my long and stressful workday, I want less stress, not more. Maybe I should go virtual. Anyway, I could be wrong, but it's a thought. Anyway, I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work-related problem, what I do on the show, I'm now in my 29th year doing it, are what I call workovers. You call in with your problem, of any sort of work-related problem for you or somebody you care about. I ask you some questions and hopefully offer you some baby steps, maybe even giant steps in the right direction. The phone number for that here at KALW and Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. A little less esoteric, or a lot less esoteric, as ever more of our lives become computer-centric, many people are going to keep learning and need to keep learning how to use current technology. So today we have tech tutors, but they exist on a relatively small scale. There are courses on Udemy and on Udacity and the like, but many people learn best one-on-one. And so as tech continues to advance, get ever more complex, I think that there'll be ever greater need for tech tutoring. And that's the kind of job I think is extremely rewarding, because one-on-one work tends to be rewarding and you see your progress. There isn't a massive infrastructure. So that's a career I can really be quite bullish about, not only for its growth, but its rewardingness. Phone number again for work over here. Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to the show. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind? Hello? Are you there? I think I've lost you. Have you hung up? Are you there? Hello? I guess not. Okay, feel free to call back. Another career that I think is likely to exist in the future is what I call an atheistic spiritual leader. Both the National Geographic Study and the Pew Center for the Study of Religion found that the fastest growing religion is no religion. Yet, despite the millennia of increased scientific understanding, most people continue to want to be in a congregation, some kind of a group, with someone to help them rise among the quotidian, rise above the daily, and to find guidelines and inspiration for an ethical life. Enter the atheist spiritual leader. I know somebody who goes, you know, who's a meditator, and she used to meditate at home, but now she goes to a place to meditate in a group, and there's a spiritual leader there. Now, I don't think right now it has risen to the level of where they make any kind of a decent living, but I think that as religion continues to die, people's thirst for spirituality and connectedness, and, you know, not everyone's a leader. Many people like to be part of the flock. I think there will be, perhaps yet undetermined, a need for atheistic spiritual leaders. Well, I don't know if you can call Buddhism an atheism, but non-deistic, maybe that's the right word. Spiritual leaders where you're not talking about some heavenly father or heavenly mother or any of that stuff. But I think there is a, you know, it's like a more ethical version of the guru. Some of those gurus, unfortunately, were found to be frauds. But I think there will always be a need for a spiritual leader of some sort. And then there is... and this may not be a surprise, that I think a career that will grow is what I call a pharmacopsychologist. There's a schism right now between most clinical psychologists and psychiatrists. Psychologists mainly rely on talk therapy, while psychiatrists rely heavily on drug therapy. And as more is learned about mental illness's biological bases, there's going to be an increased need for clinical practitioners who are skilled both in the pharmacological and in the verbal. In the end, that's our best shot at making improvements. So those are some of my thoughts about careers for the future. I'll give out the phone number again. If you or someone you care about has got a work problem, try to help you solve it. Phone number here at Work with Marty Nemko, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. I want to talk now about career changes. Now I want to get down and dirty practical, no more predictions. Many people who would like to change careers are daunted appropriately because it's hard, especially if you're past your 20s, to go and try to be a newbie where you have no experience and going to be probably paid poorly, and even if you get hired at all, because why would somebody want to hire you with no experience? But there are some careers, and I've mentioned some in previous weeks, that tend to be relatively easy, not easy, but easier for people who are changing careers. And I want to share a few of those now. Personnel recruiter. I am well aware that employers can find it very easy to go and place an ad on Craigslist or Indeed or Simply Hired or on a professional or on LinkedIn and get 1,000 applicants. But screening them is both time-consuming and it's quite an art. And so I think that they will be especially in the difficult to fill areas like experienced emergency department nurses or CCU nurses or artificial intelligence programmers or big data analysts, there will continue to be a need for personnel recruiters. What people don't realize about that career, though, is it is pretty much a sales job. You've got to convince employers to consider the candidate you've unearthed. First of all, you got to convince them to hire you when they could get an ad, they could place ads for next to nothing. And then you have to get them to consider the candidates that you've unearthed for them. But it's a career that doesn't necessarily require another degree or an advanced skill set. So for the sales-oriented person who may have some tech skills especially, personnel recruiter may be one of those careers that's not too difficult to transition into. Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko. It's your turn on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hello.
Oh, yeah. Hi, great. Hi, Marty. This is Stephen Hall calling. We were small group leaders in the Foundations of Patient Care over at UCS.
Oh, right, Steve. Of course I know. I didn't know your last name, Stephen. Nice to be speaking with you, wasn't it? Isn't that fun teaching medical students at UCSF? I love it.
Oh, yeah, and I, it's a great, great thing to do. And so anyway, nice to be able to speak with you on the air. I am a practicing psychiatrist for the audience to know that. I just want to go back to the last, I just tuned in and I heard you talking about pharmacopsychologists. And So I would just say that, we already have those, in the form of psychiatrists who practice psychotherapy like myself. And I think many, many psychiatrists, particularly in the large urban areas of the United States, still practice psychotherapy. And much of the reason for the push for pharmacology from psychiatrists is really a market force. People demand that, and the insurance companies pay for it. As long as psychotherapy is still taught in the major training programs in psychiatry in the United States, we have people who, if they are asked to, are capable of delivering psychotherapy. A lot of the reason why they don't is driven by the lack of compensation for doing psychotherapy, and that ultimately would, if that were improved, it would encourage psychiatrists to continue to offer it. I would also just add that as medical doctors, we're just in a much better place to be able to prescribe and manage the effects of any set of medications as opposed to folks with psychological training.
I'm curious what you think about, you know, that's the from the perspective of a psychiatrist. From the perspective of not a direct consumer, but I've referred so many people to mental health professionals, both psychiatrists, psychologists, LCSWs, etc. It does seem that there is a bifurcation. There are some psychiatrists who just are both more comfortable, more expert at the pill dispensing. It's not purely consumer driven. And then there are some like yourself, Stephen, who you know are more therapy oriented, but they tend to be one, not purely one or the other, but they tend to be bifurcated that way. And what I was talking about in terms of projecting forward, that because the efficacy of psychotherapy, as you well know, is not as great as we wish, and while our current crop of drugs is also not as efficacious as we wish, given that I was projecting forward for the next decades, it seems to me that someone who was had expertise both at what will be the cutting edge a decade or whatever from now in terms of pharmacological approaches as well as psychotherapeutic approaches will be the most desired person. Do you buy that analysis?
I absolutely do. And I agree with you that it's certainly a minority of psychiatrists today who do both. And the reasons for that are multiple, of course, but I would argue if the psychiatry training programs don't continue to improve the psychotherapy training of their graduates, they will be handing away that unique combination of qualities that psychiatry originally had, up until the last few decades. They will be handing it away and that void will be filled, as you suggest, by either the psychology profession or some other profession that comes along. And I think that would be very unfortunate and foolish on the part of the psychiatric profession. And I would add that this is a struggle that goes on currently in the academic psychiatric world for determination of how much time gets devoted mm-hmm. to psychiatry residents in their psychotherapy training.
Well, I'm looking at the clock. We've got to end the show, but I'm delighted that you called, Stephen, and I look forward to teaching with you in the medical school next semester.
Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot, Marty. Great show. Appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah, it was a joy co-teaching with you, and I do look forward to doing it in the future. Take care.
Excellent. I do as well.
Great. Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. We only have about 30 seconds before I have to say goodbye, so I was starting to offer some careers that are useful for career changers, so I'm going to just briefly mention another one. I had alluded earlier to the importance of technicians, and I was talking about maybe in the future a technician who specializes in autonomous vehicles is really being ahead of the curve, but currently wind turbines is a big deal. There's a lot of wind turbines, and because there's so many moving parts, and they're subject to the wind, as they need technicians. ATMs continue to need technicians. Smartphones, industrial machinery like robotic welders. So because that's not going to require a degree but relatively short training, that's a career that many people have successfully transitioned to. And that is Work with Marty Nemco for this week. I do want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course, all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Thursday at 7 p.m. You can call in for a Workover Plus. My wife, Barbara Nemco, and I are going to do quick debates. Is it time to put neckties and high-heeled shoes in the workplace trash? Or what's the best approach to an angry coworker? What should a burned-out teacher do? Until then, this is Marty Nemco reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.